I'm Fathery.
And this is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Talking about some Star Trek Discovery news today.
Right. The leaks are starting to come fast and furious. There's got to be a trailer, right?
Eventually. They're going to hold off on that because it sounds like we're not getting the show until later in the year. We'll get to...
It's going to be 2018, isn't it?
No. But we do have some info on the release, actually, that we'll be getting to in a little bit. But okay. We'll go ahead and start with the really big news that everyone's talking about.
Right.
That is the new cast additions, Jason Isaacs and Mary Wiseman.
You know him as Filmdom's Harry Potter's, or Lucius Malfoy's dad.
I don't know him as that, because I don't
No, you know him as Lucius Malfoy. Jeez, I completely screwed that up. He's Draco Malfoy's dad, Lucius Malfoy. He's evil dad with long blonde Thor hair.
Well, I'm sure that's cool, but...
What do you know him from, Fathery?
Well, to me, he's going to be Captain Lorca, commander of the USS Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know him from, I guess most recently, he's the Grand Inquisitor on Star Wars Rebels.
Okay.
He's done some voice acting. He's been in a lot of the DC animated movies as nothing but villains. Sinestro, Ra's al Ghul, Lex Luthor...
That's honestly a pretty badass lineup of villainy.
Yeah, well, those are like the three biggest assholes in the DC universe.
And he's got like, I think, quintessential evil British guy voice.
Absolutely.
His other role that people might have seen that in the sort of pop culture out there is British commander in The Patriot.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Gibson's highly historically accurate portrayal of Revolutionary War America.
And yeah, and he's just like the most evil fuck that the United States has ever fought.
Yep. I still remember like the trailers for that. Even the trailers were funny where he's like the rules of warfare do not apply here or something like that.
He's done a lot of military stuff though. He's also in Black Hawk Down.
Okay.
He was in a Fury from a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah. He's got kind of a chiseled, scary, a little bit scary-looking face.
But he does have, like, this presence that he brings.
Yep.
That, I'm guessing he's a classically trained British actor, so...
Yep.
They go with those types a lot in Star Trek. I don't know if he's going to be another evil bad guy, and we're going to have a bad captain, or if maybe he will...
And if once a British person might not be like they are in Star Wars.
Well... Captain Picard was played by a British guy.
It's true.
But they might want just this guy with that military, that commander presence as the captain.
Right. If who's our lead? What's the character's name?
Lieutenant Commander Rainsford.
Rainsford.
Or Number One.
Number One, yeah. If Number One has like sort of a higher degree of empathy or, you know, interfaces better with people, I can see how that might make her an easier counterpoint if he's kind of brusque. Yeah, Picard was brusque when they began, and even actually throughout the whole series, he was somewhat always registered as that.
And I could see them kind of doing Captain Jellicoe, the guy who took over the Enterprise in season 5 when Picard was messing around with the Cardassians.
Yep.
And he doesn't get along with the crew. Although if he's calling her Number One, I'm thinking that they have some kind of rapport.
Because that's an informal sort of thing.
Yeah, you wouldn't say that to, like, oh, I hate this crew under me. They're terrible at everything. Number One, maybe, that's your nickname.
Maybe every time he says it, he's like, can you come over here? Number One. he's real sarcastic about it all the time.
The main thing is we just don't know. I'm thinking at some point he will lose command and Rainsford will step up, but we will wait and see. I think this is really good casting, though.
I like it, too.
It's some of, like, the most exciting casting that we've heard so far.
Yeah, he will for sure, I think, along with Michelle Yeoh as captain of the other ship, have presence on screen.
And then the other cast addition that we have is Mary Wiseman, who will be playing a Starfleet cadet named Tilly. I'm not sure if that is a first name or last name. Sounds like it could go either way.
Yep.
She's completing her last year of the academy by doing field training on board the USS Discovery.
Does that, like, I'm woefully ignorant of real-world military stuff. Do people complete academy training on, like, if not warships, then on, like, you know, mission-based, you know, naval vessels and things like that?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure, but there is a precedence in Star Trek to do that.
Sure, sure.
Most notably being Wesley Crusher from The Next Generation.
Right. I mean, I like, you know, the interesting, these can be the eyes-on characters. Of course, a lot of people thought Wesley was kind of the annoying, you know, smart-ass kid thing. And I think handled a little bit more strongly that you could have a better introductory character or just an interesting younger voice character.
And
I don't know this actress from anything.
Oh, well, she's very young and very unknown. She graduated from Juilliard in 2015, and the only thing I could find out about her is she's done some stage work in New York, and just last year started doing some TV work, including a show called Longmire. She was on a few episodes.
All right, I've heard of it.
I hadn't heard
Registers,
of it.
Registers, yeah. I think it's got a following. I think it's supposed to be good.
As far as the character, though, we can speculate on that. Knowing that we're going to have this higher-ranking lieutenant commander as the main character, I'm wondering if they might have some kind of relationship between them, maybe like a mentor, protege type thing.
Sure.
I could also see them doing that with Rainsford and the higher-ranking Michelle Yeoh on the Shenzhou. I don't know, maybe it's like a three levels of mentorship.
Mentordom? Are you saying that just because they're women that there's going to need the mentoring?
No, I'm saying that...
Can they be mentoring with any other given character?
Sure, why not?
Sexist bastard.
But on the gender note,
yep.
We do know that there is a young man, Ensign Connor, on board the other ship, the Shenzhou.
Okay.
Both these people will probably be around the same age. So, possible romantic fling there.
Right. It'll be interesting, whenever they do get into that, and that could be from the first episode, or that could be something that slowly develops, it's going to show up at some point. I'll be curious to see how they handle it. I don't know that I've ever felt that Trek is really at its strongest with relationships. They sometimes read a little flat to me, and there's ones I like on Trek and ones that I'm not wild about. I just never thought that their writing like sparkled at that.
I would say there's good examples and bad examples, but maybe we should go into like the full list as a topic at another point.
Yeah, I think this would be a good idea. See which ones are the best ones, which ones are the tawdriest ones.
But just going over the entire cast that we have now, this brings a total of 13. I believe we have 9 Starfleet officers between the two ships, 3 Klingons, and 1 Vulcan ambassador who happens to be Spock's daddy. So that's a total of 13. So
we don't know quite what role the Klingons will play.
Right, yeah,
We've seen the conceptual crypt ship or whatever art that may or may not have anything to do with reality. But for sure, Klingons are going to have a role.
Yeah, but they were talking about Klingons so early. I'm expecting them to be at the least heavily reoccurring. Kind of like how the villains on Deep Space Nine were handled. Gul Dukat shows up multiple times a season. Or possibly they'll be in every episode or damn near every episode. Telling one serialized story over 13 episodes would definitely you know, cause like Game of Thrones type situations where you have a large cast and, mm-hmm. and they're frequently checked up on, you know, you cut from one character to another right. character to sure. another in different places. So maybe the Klingons will be used in that capacity.
You ever seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid?
Yeah.
You know the part where they're being pursued by that posse or whatever, and like every few days they realize that they're still following him and they're like, who are these guys? I kind of want to see a season of that where they're just, like, on the run for whatever reason, and they're like, we cannot shake these freaking Klingons.
Well, hopefully it has a better ending that will lead to a season two.
if it goes poorly, that's a badass way to go out.
That could
just
be.
Just a thought.
And then we get a brand new cast in the next season.
Uh-huh.
on that note, Les Moonves, the CEO of CBS,
mm-hmm.
who is, I guess, the authority on anyone working on Star Trek Discovery. Mm-hmm. He's the final, the buck stops with him as far as you okay. know what choices to make. Possibly had a conflict with Brian Fuller. That's rumors. We don't know if that was true, if that's mm-hmm. why Fuller left the show. He did speak at an investors event last week.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he expects after Discovery launches, CBS All Access will reach up to 4 million subscribers.
Interesting.
And that's not just banking on Discovery.
That sounds big.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, just to put that in a frame of reference, like a show like The Flash on CW,
mm-hmm.
that gets probably around 4 million viewers an episode.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're
4 million paying subscribers.
Yeah. But they're going to have other content besides Discovery.
Right.
We should actually... You know who we should ask about his opinion on that?
Yeah.
Would be Randy.
Yeah, yeah. My the store owner at Rogues Gallery where I work.
He would... I'd be curious to ask him what he thought about that because he's a big TV guy, but...
Yep.
I
mean, that sounds like something you might tell your investors, by the way. That may not sure, yeah. fully accurately reflect reality. You know, I've always sort of helped or felt and hoped that they so need this to be a flagship series that it has to be good. And
they're putting so much money in it.
Right.
And they have Netflix giving them money to put into it.
Oh, right. I forgot that.
What's
Netflix get out of that?
Well, Netflix has all the distribution outside of the United States.
Right, right. That's how they're going to get it, like, early or whatever.
Right. And I don't know if it's been said how much money comes from Netflix, how much money comes from CBS themselves,
mm.
but they're spending $6 to $7 million on an episode.
Wow.
And that's, like, what the budget was for Game of Thrones in season one.
Yeah.
When they had to build the Stark's castle in Winterfell and all the sets.
And I don't know if... I don't think we've talked about this, but I will be interested just to see, you know, the kid in me especially will be interested just to see how that translates into cool ship stuff. Like, are their battles going to be filmed more like the, you know, the Abrams movies have been? The, you know, are they going to stick with kind of more of a classic thing, you know, Prime Universe approach?
You mean as far as, like, the execution of a battle, if it's sure. more like a...
Very kinetic and high... You know, I mean,
like
even
a Star
the...
Wars-type space battle versus, like, a World War II on ships
right.
firing big guns
I mean,
at each
even
other.
Even throughout, you know, like, DS9 and stuff, I saw enough to see that... And, or, you know, like, anybody who saw, like, First Contact or the Battle with the Borg and all that stuff mm. has seen that they will sometimes do these pretty fast-moving battles.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that likes those, and there's a part of me that kind of wishes that it was all like Wrath of Khan, but just with more big ships and stuff, so kind of more slow-moving. But,
Wrath of Khan had, like, no money.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, I think a lot of that, I mean, James Horner did such an amazing score, and it was so well-edited and everything. But I will say, I like, what do they call the Abramsverse? I can't remember.
The Kelvin timeline.
The Kelvin timeline. There's parts of the Kelvin timeline action stuff that I liked. I'm just diverting here. Just something to talk about in the future or to guess at. It'll be interesting to talk about certainly when we see some clips of it.
He did also say at this event that he's expecting Discovery to finally come out in late summer or early fall.
Mm-hmm.
And also in some confirmation along those lines, or semi-official confirmation, there is a Twitter handle called Stella the Star Trek Dog, which claims to be Nicholas Meyer's dog,
uh-huh.
and often provides insight into the Discovery uh-huh. writer's room.
Yep.
And Stella the Star Trek Dog posted this picture on Twitter that was quickly taken down.
Okay.
But it would seem to imply that the...
A release date.
The show is coming out in August. The picture is just a post-it note with the word August written on it.
It is certainly pregnant with meaning, and the kind of thing where if it was not the case, I mean, I guess they can always blame it on that dumb dog, but I think people might be a little saddened or angered if that was dropped without any meaningfulness.
Yeah.
My birthday is in September, so if they have to bump it back a month, they can, but it has to come out in September. I'm letting you know, CBS...
Yeah, I hope
treat
you
me.
Have a happy birthday
yeah.
with Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just one other side note. At the same event, this investors event, the new CEO of Viacom was there, Robert Bakish, who... Uh-huh. There's been some shuffling around with Viacom and Paramount had a less than... what they were expecting type of year
okay.
in 2016.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're looking for a new CEO for Paramount, which will be important for Star Trek movies and the Kelvin movies,
mm-hmm.
if they're going to make any more. But the new CEO of Viacom, the parent company of Paramount,
mm-hmm.
he said that the... he was talking about how Paramount is committing to 15 movies a year, and they're going to be a little bit more selective, but it's still going to include their big tentpole films. The examples he cited was Transformers, Mission Impossible, and Star Trek.
Okay.
So he's still thinking of Star Trek. And if you look at the last 10 years or so, pretty much every year Paramount releases a Transformers, Star Trek, or Mission Impossible movie
mm-hmm.
in the summer. So they kind of, you know, expect to have that big summer blockbuster,
sure.
which... The Kelvin movies are, in right or wrong, that's what they're intended to be.
What was the last one called?
Star Trek Beyond.
Okay. I actually don't know. Did it do pretty well?
It underperformed.
Did it?
And a lot of fans think it's the best of the three. But
that was sort of how I felt afterwards, although I'd have to see it again to kind of make up my mind.
Yeah. Well, we'll be covering each of those
yep.
when we cover the Star Trek movies.
It'll be exciting.
Moving on to the next topic, I didn't find out about this until recently, but at the Las Vegas convention that they have every year,
mm-hmm.
For the last year, in 2016, for the 50th anniversary, they had a panel with many of the actors from Star Trek, including Scott Bakula, who played Captain Jonathan Archer on Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked him if he was, possibly going to be involved in any way with Star Trek Discovery. And here's what he said.
What I wanted to find out, or what I wanted to ask you, with the new series coming out, would you be interested in reprising Archer if it was...
Oh, absolutely. I Brian and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
And he tells the crowd, you know, not to go twittering or posting about it, but he does say that him and Brian Fuller had a conversation about it. And I'll provide a link to this video so you can watch it in full, but he goes on to say that he's looked at some pictures from Discovery. So Brian Fuller had kind of a semi-serious, at least, conversation with
right.
him. He was showing him conceptual things. And Scott Bakula said the thing that'll make it really easy to appear is that he is on the same network. He's on
right.
one of the NCIS New Orleans.
Okay.
On CBS.
Mm-hmm.
So if he needed to work Discovery into his schedule, it would be very easy to arrange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that was interesting. That was not just a, oh, it'd be nice kind of thing. He was like, yup.
Yeah, and then he says, yeah, me and Brian Fuller were just talking about that. And if you watch the video a little bit more, he goes on to say...
Calm down. Everybody calm down. It happens to be on the network that I'm on right now, so that's a good thing. People say that in our business all the time. Love to have you on. Can't wait to work with you. I am very, very excited about him helming this new franchise. I did see some pictures of things that I can't talk about. I saw some images of makeup that I can't talk about. They were awesome. If you know his other shows, if you know who he is visually, times 10. That's all I'm going to say. So yes, I would love to be on it if asked, and we'll see what happens. I can be on it.
You can?
Yes.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
And that's kind of sad to hear now that we know that he won't be helming it.
But, yeah.
Maybe there's still a possibility for Scott Bakula to show up. He would be very old.
The Dr. McCoy style from Encounter at Farpoint.
And I would almost rather them do some kind of temporal Cold War time travel explanation.
Sure.
Simply because I like the idea that's kind of official canon, it's kind of not, but it's just been suggested for the last decade or so. Captain Archer died in the year 2245 after the 1701 Enterprise launched on her maiden voyage. He died like the day after. Like, he lived long enough to see the next Enterprise, mm-hmm. and then he died. And that's kind
of
cool.
Yeah, it has a little bit of that feeling of kind of legendary quality to
it. Yeah, he lived long enough to pass the torch.
Mm-hmm. He's also got some relatively youthful vibrance to him. Still, just looking at that clip there, where I could see that. It'd be decent enough to get him. I'd kind of like to see him at a younger age and not all under a ton of makeup, having to dodder around.
Yeah, even when they do the makeup really good, it always feels a little off.
It does.
But that brings us to our last topic as far as Discovery news goes. We did know that there is a Discovery novel in the works. It's going to be written by David Mack, who's written a number
of
Star Trek books.
Yeah. I can't remember if I've actually read anything from him. I feel like I must have. But I'm kind of hit and miss with what I've read in him.
Well, he wrote the Vanguard series that I really want to read, I've just never gotten around to.
Mm-hmm. What's that cover?
It's like, he says he hates it when people describe it like this, but it's basically Deep Space Nine, but in the original series era.
Okay.
It's a space station that has a big galacto-political storyline going on
but
it.
Circa the original series.
Yes. So you're dealing with, like, Klingons and that type of stuff from that
era. I need to read that too.
Well, maybe we could do a series on those books. I think there's 5 of them, though, so it's a big commitment.
Yeah, you know.
But his Star Trek Discovery book has been titled Desperate Hour, which is very vague and tells us absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Sometimes that's how they title them.
But it's supposedly coming out in January. There is an option to pre-order it on Amazon, but that's not an official release date from CBS licensing, so that is subject to change. We know it's not going to come out until after the show premieres, so probably just sometime in 2018 we can look forward to reading that.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just want to pick this guy's brain, because he obviously knows a lot about Discovery's probably read the scripts and stuff, but
let's get him on the show. We'll Skype him in.
Yeah, I think he lives in New York, so
we have technology now. We can do these things.
We'll see if we had a transporter, we could beam him down here to Texas.
As it is, we'll have to set up a stuffed dummy and then digitally project his face onto it.
That would work.
And it would look boss.
I don't know about that, but it would look like something. So that's pretty much all we have for Discovery. You have any final thoughts on anything that we talked about?
Nope. No, you know, Last week we talked about our fears, our trepidations about it. I'm still feeling like some positivity towards this.
It was the Jason Isaacs casting that did it.
Yeah, maybe so. I think he'll be a bit of a powerhouse. Number one from Walking Dead is going to have her work cut out for her not being overshadowed, though, with, you know, the likes of Isaacs and Michelle Yeoh and stuff running around on the set. Now, how they film it and, you know, how much screen time people are going to be getting, and whether the captain is portrayed as somewhat villainous or maybe like somebody who's, like you say, like Jellicoe, who maybe doesn't fit in with traditional Starfleet protocol and it has to be kind of overridden in some ways. You know, there could be a lot of things that would put her in the spotlight and keep that from becoming a problem. But I do think that's a slight risk, is the relative unknown up against the kind of the potent older actors, you know, like the equivalent of Patrick Stewart in the X-Men movies and Ian McKellen. They always kind of commanded it. And you had to have a Hugh Jackman in there with a lot of screen time to kind of rein it in, or, you know.
You talk about X-Men a lot on here.
Well, I like the X-Men a lot. I would actually say that the X-Men and Star Trek were the twin poles of my pop cultural awakening as a kid.
So you're saying you want to have another podcast called Tex-Men?
Yes, if we could. You know, just a few years ago, I read the novel that was the X-Men Star Trek crossover novel.
Oh, God.
And no, I thought it was pretty decently done. The comic that had come out in the 90s, okay, I thought was weak.
That's the only thing I read was the comic.
Yeah, there was an actual novel. I bought it for like 10 cents or something through Amazon because I just wanted to know what the deal was. And in prose, where it got to breathe a little bit more, I felt that they got the characters down. It was really fun watching them kind of interact. I'm gonna give it a recommendation. Don't remember its name, but it's out there.
Does it still have that that gag where someone says Dr. McCoy and Beast and Bones both say yes at the same time?
That was the best part about the comic, but I don't know, because I don't think they had Beast on this particular team. I think in some ways it was more of the traditional like 80s era team that like I kind of grew up with, which was I think it was like Storm, Colossus, for sure Nightcrawler, maybe Kitty Pryde,
Logan
for sure. I don't think it was too many people beyond that, but it was halfway decent. It was all right.
Well, I'll Food probably not read it, but
I'm gonna bring it over next time. You can check it out. You can let it gather dust around here, but when you read a few pages, you'll want to know more.
I'll look into that and see if you're right or if you're full of shit.
Yeah, it's only fair. Well, what about you? Are you on the casting stuff?
I'm pretty happy with Jason Isaacs. I can't really comment on Mary Wiseman, but just from, you know, how she looks, the history she has, I think that's a good idea to have this very young woman that has never been done in Star Trek before. You have this this 20-year-old young woman, straight out of the academy, and so that's going to be unique. And I assume that she has some acting chops if she's done all this stage work and just came out of Juilliard. So
yeah,
like she got a lot of work in 2016 on TV. So people must like her for some reason.
You know, I think we've talked about this before, but I think that Will Wheaton is a very talented actor, and like just a year or so before Next Generation came out was Stand By Me, and he was like really, really amazing performance in that. And I felt like the Next Generation didn't always tap into like kind of what he could do. So I will hope for this younger actress that she will get that kind of more meaty role that he maybe didn't. Wesley Crusher all right, by the way. I don't want to hate.
Well, we will talk more about that soon, because the next episode of Tex Trek will be a discussion on the Next Generation pilot encounter at Farpoint.
Right on.
So until then,
live long and prosper, y'all.
Thank all of you so much for checking out this installment of Tex Trek. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to like our YouTube videos and subscribe to our channel. Audio-only version of episodes are available at our website, www.text-trek.com. Please check out our site, especially if you just want an audio-only podcast. We have that available for you. Y'all can also keep up with us online. You can follow us on Twitter, at TXTrek, or you can check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/text-trek. Please, by all means, let us know what you think by dropping a comment anywhere you see fit. We definitely want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you liked and what you would like to see more of, what you would like to see differently going forward. If you want to email me directly, go ahead. I can be reached at fatheryactual@text-trek.com. Thank all y'all again. Take care.